Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Insight into Healing. My name is Alexa Servodidio, and I am your host. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Tonight's guest is Aria McKenna. Aria is the founder of the Global Cooling Project. As director of Voice Tree Productions and the New York VoiceOver Success Program, Aria has also been involved with direction, casting, narration, and production of voiceover commercials and audiobooks. Voice Tree's focus was on eco-friendly production with 100% carbon offset and environmentally friendly facility. Aria, who will play the role of Amanda Cook, was the first place winner for the dramatic acting from the National Society of Arts and Letters for the Southeastern United States. Her film Right Hand Red was nominated for a short Grand Prix award at the Warsaw International Film Festival. She is known for her dramatic work in the feature film Brilliant Mistakes as the alcoholic mother who spirals downhill when her daughter lands in a coma. Her TV work includes A Haunting, Celebrity Ghost Stories, The Haunting of, Deadline Crime, and True Crime. She also played opposite Paul Rudd and Adam Scott in Rudd's production of Bloody Poetry at the Globe Playhouse. Welcome, Aria. Thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thank you so much, Alexa. How are you doing?
Very good. Very good. Thank you.
Good.
There's so many different places that where we can start, but I really wanted to ask you about the Global Cooling Project. What is that all about?
Yeah, the Global Cooling Project is something that I actually started working on some time ago, just in terms of creatively visualizing it. I'm an environmentalist at heart. I've for a long time struggled between my desire to just be creative and to be an artist and acting has always been my passion. But I've also found myself in situations where I became so aware of the impact that we were having on the planet, not just because of the impact on the planet, but also how that reflects back to us, how it reflects back to all the other animals on the planet. And it's really been a passion of mine to feel like I could get involved and that I could help to be part of the solution. So that was really the inspiration behind it. So I developed it's a two-part project. The Global Cooling Project is actually the website where I'm putting together. One of my pages is a climate change reversing store, is what I'm calling it. And that is a collection of various companies that are actually working for technologies and products that either have no carbon footprint or greatly reducing our carbon footprint. So that when you go there, you could, for instance, switch to 100% wind electricity just using your own utility bill that you have right now. There's a company called Ethical Electric you can do that through. And a lot of people aren't very aware of this. They just haven't gotten the information, and they don't realize how easy it can be to make a really dramatic impact on lowering our negative effect on the planet. So that was basically my goal with the site portion of the project. But I'm also in development with a web series called Revolution Earth, and that really is the crux of how I want to get the message out. So it's a love triangle between a journalist, an environmental activist, and an oil company lobbyist. And so it gives the context of it's a story, it's a drama, it's a romance, and there's also suspense in it. So it's entertainment that has been put together to also help educate people and help inspire them on how they can be a part of making a difference. My partner is Jeff Abagov, who was also an executive producer on Two and a Half Men, a writer on Cheers, and the Golden Girls, Roseanne. He's got, you know, a huge background behind him in TV, obviously, and a Golden Globe under his belt. And we've also got an Emmy-nominated line producer, Walter Barnett, and we've got a Nobel Peace Prize-winning climatologist to use as a consultant. So this is all, you know, we've been working really hard on this, developing the story and putting the pieces together to really link entertainment, art, and environmentalism, basically.
Yeah. And I think that's so impressive that you're able to entertain people, but they're also able to walk away with education. So, yes, it's great to watch a film or a web series or a television show and you're entertained and you walk away. But when you can walk away with education, something that you can give back to your community to save the earth, to help the environment, it's so powerful because I don't think, I'm not
Thank
too
you.
Familiar with it. When you, you mentioned carbon footprint, what exactly is that? I've heard it so many times, but I really keep saying, what is that?
Well, basically, most of the fuel sources that we use today we use a lot of fossil fuels. And those fossil fuels, when they get burned, release a lot of carbon into the atmosphere. And what that carbon does is it actually absorbs heat and it reflects it back onto the planet. So typically what happens is you've got sun rays coming in, and then they bounce off the planet and they go back out into outer space. So then you've got all these carbon particulates in the air. And what happens is they don't bounce back out into outer space. So that's why we have rising seas. And right now, you might have seen everything that's been going on in South Carolina. They've had a lot of activity before this happened. There has been a lot of activity around awareness of how vulnerable they are, because the seas really are rising, and it had been happening for a long time, but since the 90s it really catapulted and everything just started getting more and more speedy, essentially, with climate change and sea level rise. So, it's a real thing. It's impacting a lot of lives, certainly not just in South Carolina. You've got all throughout the world. I mean, you've got people migrating right now because of issues of the extreme weather and storm surge and droughts. So, so the actual climate change end of this is something that really – a lot of people think of it as something that is far off into the future. It's our grandchildren, it's our great-grandchildren, and they for sure will feel the effects more than we're feeling it, but we're feeling it right now. It's not just into the future, it's happening now. So, so basically our carbon footprint is how much carbon our daily lives is responsible for putting out there. Each of us individually can make choices that reduces how much carbon we're responsible for personally. So, through switching to wind energy or putting solar panels on your house, and these days, solar panels can actually save you money from relying on the public utilities. So it actually has become a very economical decision to become greener. By and large, you can save a lot of money when you reduce your carbon footprint. So,
yes, and it's interesting. I just received a flyer in the mail today about attending a town meeting in my town about sustainable energy and helping to see if we can, if also to help residents realize there is another option. for energy, for Con Edison or whatever. So people, because other people just think, is this one place? Is this where I go? I don't know anything else. People don't know much about anything else. So let's just stick with it. But I think by educating, going to a meeting, so it's not such a scary, like, ooh, I don't know if I want to be a pioneer with this. But if you know this is something that is supported and other people are promoting it, it really starts becoming something people can become very familiar with.
Yeah, and, you know, if you're young enough and you put solar panels on your house, you can save up a lot of money that way because you're not buying energy all the time. So essentially what happens is you've got companies now that will install solar panels for free. And you're basically just leasing the panels. You're not paying for the energy. You're leasing the panels that have been estimated to be able to supply whatever energy it is that you typically consume. And if you consume a bit more than that at a certain time or the solar panels aren't working, then you can draw from the grid. But then during the day, when it's making more energy than you're actually using, then it's actually giving energy back to the grid with green electricity. So, you know, you're not locked into monthly having to pay for what you're using. You're paying for the panels, but you're leasing them. Quite frequently, you can lease them at a cheaper rate than what you would be paying in utility bills. Excuse me. And then once they're paid off, and you've got free electricity. So, it's really great. So the part of the idea behind the Red Series is that we're going to be dealing with these issues while the main character is, who's a journalist, is trying to figure out what is going on. So just like you say, you know, you don't really know that much about it. She doesn't know that much about it either. And she has this opportunity to go back and forth, get the story from the oil company lobbyist and get the story from the environmental activist. And it's her journey, really, of discovery about the issues. And at the end of each episode, there's a choice of prompts of something that you can do to lower your carbon footprint so that not only are you getting educated about the issues, but you're getting shown how you can make a difference at the end of each episode. That's the concept behind what we're doing.
That's very impressive. I mean, I think it's so great. People can actually utilize something, walk away with something and say, okay, this is what I can do now in my own home, in my own apartment.
Yeah, I like to liken it to, have you ever seen Erin Brockovich?
A long time ago,
It was a Julia Roberts movie, and it was one where, and it was based on a real person. Erin Brockovich is still out there. And Erin Brockovich had joined a law firm. She was a struggling single mom, and she joined a law firm, and she ended up discovering this file that no one was doing anything with, and it had to do with the residents of this town that were getting poisoned from the water supply. And the company that was poisoning them was also paying for their hospital bills, and they were all really, really sick, and no one really knew what was going on or really could put together why they were all sick. And she ended up uncovering why and going after the company that had been poisoning everybody and lying to them about it. And that movie inspired me so much. I just remember, you know, getting really fired up about it and so inspired. But I walked away, and it's like, okay, well, what do you do from there? You know, there wasn't anything you could necessarily engage in to, you know, get involved in environmentalism directly from there. So it's, you know, I kind of liken it to that sort of experience where you can get so inspired by a film and not have an outlet. So this is an idea, you know, putting it on the web for me is the way to be able to use it to inspire but to give an immediate outlet at the end.
Yes. Yes, and people have the option. I think it's so nice, too, to be able to, you know, to watch it and be by yourself and being able to make that decision on your own, to try it, to take a chance, say, okay, let me try this, and which is so, so powerful to be able to have a choice.
Right, and it can be a really, you know, it can be a small thing that you do. You could click a button and sign a petition, or you can click a button and make an appointment to test drive an electric car. That's the idea that we're working with, is to really give a range of choices, so that it can be something where you're making a really solid commitment, or it can be something where you're just taking a moment to engage and go to a nonprofit organization and learn a little bit more, or just click a few buttons and share your voice, which actually goes really far. I just came back from Washington, D.C., actually. I was there last week with a group from the American Sustainable Business Council. And it was an amazing visit. One of the things I got while I was there, we actually visited Senator Udall's office and talked to him about a proposed carbon tax bill. And one of the things I kept hearing this time round is that the people in government, they need our help, that there are people in government who don't want to, who don't feel like they can vote their conscience, because the oil companies and other big corporations are the ones who are going to be giving them huge donations for their reelection campaigns. So if they're afraid that they're not going to be able to get reelected, if they don't give those corporations what those corporations want, then that's why we have this kind of, that's why we're at this place where the government's not being able to get as much progress done. And so it's a really unfortunate situation. But when people in their demographics, when people in their areas speak out, they know they've got their support on those particular issues. And they know if they vote the way those people want them, that they'll get reelected. And so our voices actually do have a lot more power than I even really realized through my time there and being able to speak with people in government. So anyhow, that's an interesting side.
It's very interesting.
What
would you recommend for an everyday person, for someone who's not too familiar, who doesn't know where to start? You know,
mm-hmm.
watching your web series, finding out more about what you do. How would someone go about to better educating themselves? What would be some first steps you would recommend for someone to start doing?
Well, I mean, one thing, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of nonprofit organizations are very active in this. For instance, I mean, 350.org is one of the leaders. The 350 is the number of particulate matters that we were supposed to not be able to go over without really endangering ourselves in terms of climate. We've climbed over that. We're now over 400. And that's why this is such a huge deal, that we need to act, and we need to act immediately, and we need to act as with as much impact as we possibly can. But organizations like 350.org, just getting on newsletters, Greenpeace, the Natural Resource Defense Council, the Union of Concerned Scientists, they're another really fantastic organization that's out there and doing a lot of outreach. One of the things that I've gotten involved with more recently, too, is you have some of these environmental organizations and various activist organizations that host group conference calls, and they talk about various issues. So I've been on conference calls where they were specifically talking about fracking, conference calls where they were talking about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And that call actually had Bernie Sanders on it. Just before he announced his presidency, he was on that call specifically talking to us about that bill and the impact that it could have on the environment, which unfortunately could be pretty devastating. So those are the kinds of things. Just getting engaged, getting on some newsletters for some nonprofit organizations can really help to raise someone's awareness because they give great information. I also have a blog, and I would encourage people to go to my website. Right now I'm primarily focused on the development of the series. And I'd like to expand that to giving more really matter-of-fact solutions and lifestyle changes that you can make. But that's in development. But my website is theglobalcoolingproject.net. And, I'd love anyone who's interested to come and check it out. And please check out the climate change reversing store. It just says climate store at the top of the menu. But that's going to be, that's got some options for green electricity in your home. And to me, that's one of the biggest ways that we can make a big impact, as well as when possible to switch to electric vehicles. Ideally, if everyone lived in a home powered by solar or wind, and then they could plug their electric vehicle into their clean energy home, that would be such a beautiful world. that's really the kind of world that I'm hoping to promote and just move along with a little bit more speed.
Yes, and it sounds like it more and more, it's becoming more of a conversation and more of a dialogue. And I think being able to educate ourselves on what all these terms are, because I think we hear them, we have an idea of what something is, but to be able to really get into a conversation and really get to know, like for fracking, I've heard about fracking, I'm really not sure exactly what it is, but I know it's something to be concerned about.
Yeah. Well, I think that is so much why I'm doing what I'm doing, because I think that it's really not through any fault of anyone that they don't really know what these things are. Because if you look at the lifestyle today, there are so many people who have two jobs. You've got two parents working, and then they go home and they've got to get dinner on the table, and then they've got to pay bills, and they've got to make sure they get enough rest so they can do it again the next day. So of course they want to relax and have some period of time where they're not thinking and they're not working and doing research about these things. So that's why I think it's really media's responsibility to help give the information that's actually important and that has an impact on the world. So that's why I'm doing this. But as far as fracking goes, basically what it is, the method that people use to extract natural gas, and they put chemicals into shale rock that is pretty deep underground, and then they frack, which is the way that they try to break up that rock, and they extract the natural gas. And what that ends up doing, the reason why it's so dangerous, is that you have people allowing companies to frack on their properties, and then the result frequently is that their water supplies get poisoned. Have you seen the images of people turning on their water in their kitchen and lighting putting a lighter next to it, and the whole thing just combusts. It goes on fire in their kitchen. That's what's happening, because natural gas is getting released into their water supplies sometimes. And even if that doesn't happen, they're also pumping these toxic chemicals basically, deep down. And so those chemicals are usually getting into the water supply as well. So you got, you know, either one can happen. You know, unfortunately, clean, safe water is becoming less and less because of things like this. So it really, you know, it's interesting because people, you know, there's this verbiage around it, and we talk about protecting the planet, and sometimes people say, oh, well, you know, the planet's going to be fine. Sure. The planet, you know, the actual round, you know, molten lava Earth will continue to exist. But there are species dying off as a result of the things that we're doing and coming back to us, too. So if we don't have enough clean water to drink, and our air is heating everything up, and I mean, this it could rise 200 feet, basically. If we don't do anything to slow this process, that's where we're heading. So, you know, it's a serious issue, and it really is more about standing up for our rights to have clean resources and healthy resources so that we can live on a healthy planet and have healthy lives and have healthy children.
Yes. You know? And I mean, so many times you're seeing so many animals, fish, see, you know, close to extinction. You're also seeing with humans, which I'm finding more and more people being diagnosed with cancer, with diabetes, having strokes, having heart attacks, upper respiratory issues. I mean, there's something going on because about, you know, 20 years ago, it wasn't as bad. Now, I mean, you can't speak to someone without someone else knowing, yes, my family member, my friend has, you know, a severe cancer. And I think there's something going on with the environment. We can't ignore it.
Absolutely. In fact, it's estimated that about 5 to 7 million people die every single year because of our dependence on fossil fuels, specifically because of fossil fuels. So, you know, that, and when I first heard that statistic, I thought I was hearing it wrong. I double-checked this so many times because I thought, there's no way. That can't be true. And if that's true, why don't more people know about this and why aren't we doing something? You know, you've got a lot of people, you know, very upset or, you know, we've got to fight terrorism. We've got to, you know, because they're going to come and get us. But really, if you want to look at what's most likely to destroy somebody, it's our dependence on fossil fuels. So, but that's not widely talked about. So, you know, and I think it has to be. So, you know, this is kind of an escalation of it. I think that, you know, there are some people who do know a lot about this and who are very passionate about it. And there's a lot of documentaries on the subject that have really wonderful information. But, you know, the people who are going to sit down to watch those documentaries are usually the ones who already know a lot about it and who are already on the side of let's protect the environment. So I think that this kind of, you know, this subject matter really needs to spill over into more mainstream media. And so that's exactly what I'm trying to do, because I think that stories can make a huge impact on people. And, you know, human beings can be extremely compassionate, but they need to be able to see what's going on in order to connect the dots first.
Yes. I think it also becomes, as you said, people have busy schedules, they have this and that. You know, to be able to really make a change in your lifestyle, you know, going for solar panels, you know, having, you know, going a different politician or a different group or something. Or even I know there's a big debate with water bottles, tap water. Mm. I mean, you don't know what is safe. And sometimes people say, all right, you know, there's so much going on, I'm just going to do what I always do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's very, very difficult to make changes like this. And it's really amazing how many of the small choices we make can make a very large impact. So, for instance, you've got companies out there. There's one particular company that I want to give a shout out because I have so much respect for the way they do things. And all it is cleaning supplies, okay? But they use all non-toxic ingredients. Everything's safe, natural. You don't have to worry about your baby poisoning themselves off of this stuff, you know, for one thing.
Wow.
The next thing is that their facilities are all solar dependent. So they're not, they're, all their energy supply is completely clean and green. And they have zero waste facilities. So I actually visited, they're called Earth Friendly Products, and they're fantastic. I visited one of their facilities out in Los Angeles, and they're actually having a ripple effect on the community around them because they don't want any of their employees going out for lunch, getting styrofoam containers and bringing them back because they would not be able to be composted, and everything that comes into their facility needs to be compostable, or it needs to, you know, there has to be a way to deal with it where it's not going to be contributing to the landfill. So therefore,
wow,
those workers would go off for lunch and they'd say, oh, I can't buy here because you use styrofoam. So then those trucks started to convert to cardboard and other kinds of whole canisters or whatever they were using that would be more eco-friendly. So, you know, one person or one organization making changes can have a really huge ripple effect. And there are companies out there who are really trying to operate as responsibly as possible. And then you've got other companies out there who, since this is, you know, there's Lysol, is a neurotoxin. And so you've got these commercials where you see a mom spray a toy with Lysol to disinfect it. And then you've got another shot where you see the baby putting the toy in their mouth.
Oh.
So, yeah, yeah. So, you know, we see these images and we think, oh, that's fine, oh, that's clean. And it's actually, I mean, it might not have germs, but it has toxic chemicals on it. And so to me, that's not really clean. And then meanwhile, you've got them operating out of facilities where every time you buy a product, if that product is made someplace where it's reliant on coal energy, that's going to have a carbon footprint. Plastics are made from petroleum products that has a carbon footprint. So it is so, I mean, it's practically impossible in this day and age to live a perfect life. But the more you know, the more you can do with the choices that you have. And what that does to me is start to encourage those green, eco-friendly companies to keep doing what they're doing, and it actually discourages the ones that are not being responsible. Then realize, wow, let's change our ways. Let's start acting more responsibly. So I think we've got a lot of power through our choices, what we do in the store as well.
Okay. And I think also those companies, when you start hitting them in the pocket, they start to realize, you know, that people are not going to be able to come to that store, not going to be able to come to that restaurant or that buffet to get food. And that's when I think people really start to realize when it has some sort of personal impact on them where they're like, wow, you know, what's going on? I mean, I'm still shocked styrofoam is still around.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Right.
Yeah. But, you know, it's hard. I mean, I am not perfect. Like, I hit takeout sometimes. I mean, I don't do it all the time, but I do. And there's always this part of me that feels guilty. If I get something, I'm like, oh, God, it's in styrofoam. Oh, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think the thing is, too, is to realize that it's not about having to be perfect, and that if you're not perfect, you know, you're a bad person. But it's about just being aware and trying to do better and better all the time, trying to incorporate it in your life in the ways that you can through awareness, and just, you know, taking just a bit more time with those choices. So you read the labels, see if it's recyclable, if it's made out of recycled materials, see if it's made in a facility that has, you know, that's solar charged. There's a Veganaise, for instance, that I get that says it's made from solar charged facilities. So I always try to choose those products over ones that aren't going to be as eco-friendly. And it's just a matter of awareness and looking, you know.
Yes. How can our listeners in their homes now, tomorrow morning when they wake up and they're going to work on like a day-to-day basis, what are certain things that they can do, that they can start incorporating and helping the environment?
No, that's a really good question. I think, I mean, one of the main things, obviously, recycling is huge. One of the things I think oftentimes gets overlooked in recycling is anything you have, anything you use. You've got a cereal box, just break it up. Take the plastic bag out of the middle, throw the plastic bag away, and then break up the cardboard. You know, I find my paper recycling bin tends to get filled up. My recycling bins get filled up way before my trash can gets filled out. I don't have to take out the trash very often. I have to take out the recycling more often. So recycling is important. Understanding what the recycling rules are in your area is important. Reducing the amount that we drive, if you can switch to, you know, taking the bus when you can, taking the train when you can, riding your bike if it's someplace close, those things can have a really strong impact. Being aware of the lights. I mean, I would really say the big thing for me is if I do have a light on, I don't have to feel guilty about it because I know that it's being supplied by wind. And switching through, your utility bill is one of the easiest things you can do because you don't have to make appointments for solar panels. You don't have to go through all of that. It's a really easy transition. So to me, I would encourage everyone to do that. And the next time that you are in the market for a vehicle, really look at the electric vehicles. See if that's something that you can do because it could be a lot easier to maintain than you think it will be. Oftentimes they have ways that you can bring a portable charger and charge in, you know, when you go to work, there are ways to do it. And the thing is that it is important enough to make the effort to learn how. One of the things I'm so impressed with is that Elon Musk, I'm sure you've heard of the Tesla, he actually put in solar-powered electric car chargers just all over the place. There's a grid of solar-powered electric car chargers. And if you were to get a Tesla, it would be completely free for you to recharge anywhere. Other cars have to pay, but I believe, I don't know the actual numbers, but I believe it's definitely cheaper for an electric vehicle, you know, to pay when you go out to recharge than to actually use gasoline, for instance. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but you have to do a little more research because you have to figure out where you can charge up. And, but I would really encourage that. Or a hybrid, you know, a hybrid is the next best thing to electric as far as I'm concerned.
Yes, and they're becoming more and more common.
They are. So they are becoming more and more common.
How do you feel this has been tying into with your acting? Because I know you're very been very busy with acting and putting all this together.
It's interesting. I think that for a while, I was really scared to start this project because acting has always been number one for me. And I was afraid that once I started this, it would take over. And it really kind of has. It's taken over. But the thing that's wonderful is at the end of this, I play the central character in the series. So it's going to give me the opportunity to mix my acting with something that I'm really passionate about so that I feel like the project I'm doing is completely in alignment with the kind of message I want to put out into the world and the kind of mark I want to have on the world. So for that, I feel so grateful that I have the opportunity to conceive the project and be a part of it. So that's on the horizon. And I'm also in a web series that should be shooting next year called Kovar. So that's on the horizon as well. And, I get gigs here and there and voiceover and, little auditions that come in. But honestly, I have been so focused on the project that I haven't been actively pursuing my acting. And sometimes I miss it terribly. I really do. But I am very driven by this particular project, and I know it's on the horizon that I get to play, the role of my lifetime.
Yeah. And so, I think that's where, also the passion comes into, because as an actress myself, too, I find, I'm very busy with my radio show and my television show, and it does have a life of its own. But then, meeting, other people, as I met you at the International Long Island Film Expo, and meeting people, other actors, actresses, producers, casting, learning about all these things, and really realizing you don't just have to do one thing, but it's also the passionate, of having what your niche is, and also bringing your acting to it.
Yeah, it's being able to feel like you're engaged in the creative process. And it's interesting how that can translate over into writing as well. The sessions that I've had with my partner writing have been very, very fulfilling as well. I love that. And it's really interesting being on the other end. Quite typically you get the script. And it's your job to figure out who this person is, and that person has already been created for you. And so I have this opportunity to have a voice in who this person is. And so it's really exciting as far as that's concerned. But I am really looking forward to once we get money and we get the funding on our belts and once we're going into production, I'm going to be so happy to shift gears and really dig into that more creative side of myself as well. And kind of, you switch gears. You go back and forth.
Where are you in the process now with the web series?
Yeah, we just put out, we're trying to get some name talent on board to really raise the visibility of the project and also to help make it easier for us to get funding. And I also am looking at a couple of companies that, ideally what I would like to do is to be funded by a green technology company, someone who's creating something that will help to be part of the solution so that we can drive people toward their technology, and they'll help fund our series. So it's, synergistic in terms of messaging and intention. So I've put that out there I just sent off some packages and we'll be waiting to hear back in terms of trying to get some meetings with some key people to get that ball rolling. And I'm also waiting to hear back in terms of some named talent to see if we can get a couple people on board and really trying to flesh out the celebrity cachet. Because, course, you need celebrity cachet to really get a lot of people to automatically want to watch you and see what you've got to say.
Yes, definitely. I think that it draws that attention to it. Do you have episodes already completed? I mean, do you still have episodes to write? How do you write them? Do you write them one at a time? What's your writing process like?
Well, right now, actually, we have this. We have an outline. We have everything. We have all of season one, which I think is going to be absolutely amazing. I'm so excited about what we have. We know where we're going from the beginning to absolutely the end, essentially. We have season one to, like, season four or five, where we want to go and where we want to end this thing. And that was interesting, writing with Jeff, because I have worked on things on my own, and it's a very different process to share that with somebody and to learn how to verbalize what's on your mind immediately. I have a tendency to get an idea and process it, write it, see it, then I know it's good. And here I had to say things before I knew it was good. And it's a little more nerve-wracking, but it was really good for me, definitely, to get into the flow of bouncing ideas back and forth and really meeting in the middle with the story. So, yeah.
I think when you're writing it and then you're acting it out, and then especially since it has such a personal importance to you, and it makes, I mean, it's more passionate, it's more exciting, but still it's a little more stressful because this is your baby, this is your passion.
It so is my baby. It really, really is. It's interesting, too, because to tell you the truth, the main character that I would be playing has definitely changed since Jeff came on board. When I first was visualizing her, I really wanted her to be my ability to say what I want to say about the way, you know, to be an advocate for the environment. And I saw her being an advocate earlier on. And the way we have it now is we develop her awareness throughout the first season. And I think that is, and she actually comes from the South. She's a conservative from the South. And I think that makes our ability to have an impact so much stronger, because you get a chance to grow with her. And it should not be a Republican issue versus a Democrat issue. This is a human being issue. This isn't an American issue versus a Russian issue versus an Israeli issue. This is everyone on the planet is affected by this. So I really want a story that does not, you know, that gives respect to differing political ideologies, different backgrounds. It really needs to have a lot of respect for both sides. So, and I think that's something that we really did. And through the evolution of that character, I think that's going to have an important impact. And a key part of the storyline that I forgot to mention, actually, is that we open every single episode about 50 years into the future. And 50 years into the future, where we've actually solved our energy dependence on fossil fuels. So we've got solar everywhere, wind, they've developed new technologies, and fossil fuels are really a thing of the past at the opening of every episode. And we visit Amanda, my character. She's basically on her deathbed at the beginning, and she's telling her story to a reporter. And then we flash back and we get to see her journey throughout and how she became a part of this movement that she knew nothing about to begin with and ended up just haphazardly, basically, becoming a huge catalyst in the environmental movement and helping to shift everything in a cleaner, safer, more ethical direction.
Yeah. And I think your approach to this is key, because you're not putting anyone on the defensive. You're not having anyone choose side. It's not about division and divide and conquer and pick your side. It's about being able to listen and tolerate everybody else's opinion. You don't have to agree, but you can say, okay, I respect that you have this opinion. Let's for the good of the earth, for the good of humankind, for the good of each other, let's see what could we do better. We're not saying you're wrong and I'm right or I'm right. You know, we're not doing that. We're not pointing fingers. But what can we work together? And I think that really brings people together instead of the division.
Yeah. You know, and there's one of the things, too, is that there's a lot of misinformation, unfortunately, that has been put out there. And so that's what makes things so confusing for people, because this is something that came out and that a lot of people it's common knowledge right now amongst environmentalists, but a lot of other people may not be aware of it. But there are scientists that were bought out by the fossil fuel industry, and they were encouraged, and they were on the payroll. This is solid evidence that they were on the payroll of the fossil fuel industry while they published articles saying that, carbon might not be responsible for climate change. So then you've got a lot of people out there who read those articles or read that those articles existed, and they go, we don't really know. And I think that it's comforting, or I don't know if comforting is the right word, but it's a lot easier to think that we're not responsible. Mm-hmm. And, because it requires more energy, more action, more engagement when you realize that connection. And it's not currently easy, but it's getting easier and easier to become a part of the solution. So, that's my goal here, too, is to help make it easier and easier.
Yes, I agree. And I think it's sometimes some people feel like, oh, good, I don't have to act. I really don't have to do anything. It's easier for them to realize, actually really admit, listen, what I'm doing can be really harsh on my environment, or this, making this change. Yes, I really like getting the styrofoam cup and going to this place every morning for coffee. I have to rush to work. I can't sit here and talk to them. But, maybe it is one day walking in and saying, listen, can we do something else? Can you have anything else?
Yeah.
Just, planting the seed. I think it all begins about planting. You don't have to change the world, but you can plant a seed.
You're absolutely right. I mean, I carry a canvas tote with me just about all the time. And it's a habit now, because I know when I'm out, I might want something, and if I want something, I'm going to feel terrible if I've got to use a plastic bag for it, because that should be completely unnecessary, and that's me having a negative impact. But how else am I going to carry it if I don't have room in my purse? So therefore, I just have something on me. Sometimes I need it, sometimes I don't, but I always have it. And, the other thing is I've got a, nice canteen, and I fill that up with filtered water from my house before I leave, and so I always have water on me. And New York City has very, very clean water, so if I ever go into the city, I can refill there very, very easily. And that way I don't have to buy plastic bottles of water when I go out. So those are definitely lifestyle changes that can make an impact. And it can be hard at first because you forget, because it's not a habit. So it takes a little time to make these things habits. But if we understand how important these issues are, when we forget them, we go, oh, man, I got to remember. Okay, I'm going to put it next to the door next time. And then we're about to go out, we see it next to the door, and we go, oh, yeah, okay, good. So, if you do drive, because I understand, I mean, some people have to drive. You do. And so if you do drive, having lots of totes, grocery bags in your in your car, so they're always ready and available. You know, there's all kinds of things that we can do, but it just takes that awareness. This is a random fact, actually, that I had not been aware of before. But when we throw food away and it goes into the garbage, that actually turns into methane, which also contributes to climate change. So eating more responsibly, you know, making a nice kale salad and then you've got the stems left over and then you saute the stems. They're delicious when you saute them. So, you know, trying to...
Very easy, good things once you start to realize them and catch yourself. And you're also making, it helps you. It makes life later on easier for you and healthier for you.
Yeah, and saves money.
Yes, and it saves a lot of money.
To throw food away. It really does.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Before we get to the end of the show, can you please say all your websites and links where people can follow up and get any updates?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, the main one, the globalcoolingproject.net, and I've got a blog there, and you can sign up for the blog, and there's also the climate store. And honestly, we really do, we need donations, honestly, to really help keep things going, because we're at a really critical stage right now in terms of reaching out to people. But we've been doing this basically on zero budget. And, you know, I've got some people in line that, you know, I could really, it'd be nice to be able to hire someone to help with marketing. It'd be really great to be able to give some money to my line producer so he can really flesh out a nice budget for us. There's a lot of things involved in development. So if anyone's really impassioned by this and wants to help support it, I definitely appreciate it. I do have tax-deductible donations I can accept through the website. I've got a fiscal sponsorship with Fractured Atlas, and so I can take tax-deductible donations as well for this. So, the globalcoolingproject.net, and I'm on Facebook. I've got a Twitter page called TGCP Rev Earth. So it's basically the Global Cooling Project, but with the first letters, and then Revolution Earth, shaved down to Rev Earth, so TGCP Rev Earth on Twitter. And just started an Instagram. And but I'm post things more on Facebook than anywhere else. Also the blog, and you can always sign up for newsletters as well. So
great.
Yeah. And my personal website is, the personal website is ariamckenna.com. That has my acting reels and things like that.
Wow. Well, I can't wait to look it all up. And again, thank you so much for being on the show this evening. It was so educational. You're welcome. Anytime.
This was a good nitty-gritty conversation. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Yeah, and I've learned so much. I think sometimes people are embarrassed to ask questions when there's a crowd around. But you know what? I got some great answers that I really didn't know, which just, you know,
that's
it can
awesome.
Really help. Great.
That's good.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Yes.
Have
everyone,
a wonderful
thank
night.
You for tuning in. You too. And everyone, thank you for tuning in tonight. You can find me on Facebook at Insight into Healing. If you have any questions, you can send it to insightintohealing@gmail.com. Thank you, everyone. Have a good night, and God bless.